This article appeared in the winter 2008 issue of UU World magazine and is available online at uuworld.org. Congregational Life. Congregations Develop Programs for Seniors by Donald E. Skinner. Doris Haskell, 81, has been a Unitarian for more than 50 years, and in that time she has been a member of several congregations. When her husband died 3 years ago, she joined her current congregation, Star King Unitarian Universalist Church in Hayward, California. The former nurse educator quickly became part of a Wednesday morning covenant group and found it to be what she needed to continue to work through her grief. "The group has been very helpful emotionally as well as intellectually stimulating for me," she said. "It's a safe place to talk about what's happening in my life." Haskell is also on the membership committee, is a Sunday morning greeter, and is a member of a committee that oversees the congregation's shared ministry program. "My world was coming apart when I came here," Haskell said. "This church was what I needed. I wanted to be with people I felt attuned with and be part of Sunday services that gave me something to think about." Congregations put a lot of effort into attracting and ministering to young people and middle-agers, but often not as much attention is paid to the folks at the other end of the age spectrum. But this is beginning to change. At first glance, older members don't seem to need as much attention as other groups. They know how things are done. They know who to ask for help. They may have been coming for years, and they know the routine. But they've also entered a stage in life where they may be experiencing physical or mental difficulties. First Parish in Concord, Massachusetts, had a wake-up call in the late 80s. The congregation was growing rapidly, and some of the older members were unhappy about the changes. They felt like strangers at coffee hour and left out of decision-making. The congregation and senior staff called in the Reverend Becky Blodgett to survey the congregation. Using the survey results, she founded a pastoral care ministry at First Parish, focusing on the emotional and spiritual needs of parishioners, including a large number of older members. "It's really made a big difference," Blodgett said. The ministry developed a pastoral visiting team of volunteers who focused mainly on older members who couldn't get to church. A second volunteer group began reaching out to people of any age with serious illnesses. Beyond that, the ministry created several smaller programs for older folks, providing places for them to talk about the challenges and joys of aging and to help them prepare for the ends of their lives. Blodgett is no longer on the congregation's staff. The current associate minister for pastoral care is the Reverend Margie King Saphir. Ministering to the elderly, she said, doesn't mean solving their problems. "The role of a minister is to show people the options and be a compassionate presence and let them make up their own minds." Under her direction, the congregation has hosted forums on a variety of issues affecting people as they age. Youth religious education classes invited older folks to come and talk about what they'd done in their lives. "We try to foster any contact we can between older and younger people," said King Saphir. First Parish also has an extended family program where groups of members come together for social activities. King Saphir is planning a program on the sandwich generation for people caring for children as well as parents. When the Reverend Walt Weider was called to the UU Church of Surprise, Arizona in 1996, it was comprised almost entirely of people 55 and older because of its location in an age-restricted retirement community. Then a few years ago, the congregation decided to move and build so that it could be open to all age groups. They started a religious education program for children and youth 3 years ago, and the older members have enthusiastically supported it, said Weider. "Older members have a strong commitment to the church," he said. "Time and again, they made significant contributions to our building project, knowing some of them would never live to see it completed. And without these folks, we'd lose a wealth of experience, not only of church life, but life in general." Lenore Gauten, 75, is a member of the Pastoral Care Committee at Surprise. She said it can be challenging to keep track of members, especially those who come infrequently or quietly drop out because of illness. The committee has a system to track people. A committee member, Tony Wells, sits in the back on Sunday morning and takes note of those who are not there and others who may need assistance. "We don't want people to just drop out," said Gordon. Wells also plans and holds parties for members who reach the age of 90. "We research their histories and invite the congregation and make a presentation," said Gordon. "These are really special moments that the congregation looks forward to." The Reverend Dr. Devorah Greenstein, the UUA's program coordinator for accessibility concerns, helps congregations minister to their oldest members. "We always talk about how we're an oasis of safety for our children, a place where they can speak openly. It's the same for elders," said Greenstein. "One woman told me before the Iraq War there was no place but church where she could speak openly about her feelings." Too often, she said, older people simply drop out. They develop a hearing problem or have to use a walker, and they can't hear the sermon, and they're afraid of being knocked down by children. But they don't like to complain, so no one notices they're gone. Greenstein said hearing loss is the biggest reason that elders drop out. That, and losing the ability to drive. There are many things congregations can do to make churches safer and friendlier places for seniors, she said. They include painting white stripes along the edge of sidewalks and steps, putting a bench in the parking lot to break up the long walk to the front door, cautioning children to be mindful of people using canes and walkers, having large print orders of service, and being familiar with assistive listening devices. Weeder said he is continually gratified by how members of his congregation care for and watch out for elders. "One thing that happens again and again is that someone using a walker will take a while to get to a microphone. Other people are patient, knowing that someday that could be them. We have a constant stream of people who are experiencing a narrowing of their world because of age, but who are steadfastly looking to the future of the church. They're willing to invest in a world they won't participate in, but still care about. I'm buoyed and amazed and proud of that congregation." Donald E. Skinner is a UU World contributing editor, a member of the Shawnee Mission Unitarian Universalist Church in Overland Park, Kansas. Skinner is also the editor of the UUA's Interconnections newsletter for congregational leaders, www.uua.org/interconnections. Spiritual Landmarks. The Mini Golf Church by Jane Greer. The High Plains Church, Unitarian Universalist in Colorado Springs, Colorado, may be the only congregation anywhere with its own 36-hole miniature golf course. The 160-member congregation, which had been meeting in rented quarters, bought an amusement park in Colorado Springs in January 2007. In addition to the golf course, the 5-acre property consisted of a 6,000-square-foot building housing video and air hockey games as well as a batting cage. The main building, constructed of steel, has been insulated and drywalled. It now contains the sanctuary, fellowship hall, and kitchen. Modular religious education classrooms were added in December 2007. The Reverend Matthew Johnson Doyle, the church's former minister who is now serving at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Rockford, Illinois, was one of the first to spot the property for sale in 2006. "I called the building committee right away," he said. "I said, maybe it's crazy, and maybe it's the perfect solution." The turning point for the committee came when they started to imagine the mini golf course as a meditation trail. The other benefit was that the property was located on a main street, and everyone knew where it was. The church operates the miniature golf course as a separate entity and employs young people from the congregation. The church's youth raised money for a local charity last summer by donating a portion of the entrance fees. Parishioners have also adopted holes and are responsible for maintaining the landscaping around them. Jane Greer is UU World's senior editor. Two Die in Knoxville Church Shooting by Jane Greer. A deadly shooting during a Sunday morning church service in Knoxville sent shocks through the Unitarian Universalist world this summer. Jim David Atkison, 58, entered the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church, TVUUC, with a shotgun on July 27th as a children's performance of the musical Annie Jr. was beginning. He opened fire on the audience, killing TVUUC board member and usher Greg McKendry, fatally injuring Linda Krager, and injuring six others before members of the congregation tackled Atkison and held him for police. Tributes to McKendry and Krager are included in this issue. Unitarian Universalists throughout the country responded with shock that turned to dismay when Knoxville Police Department Chief Sterling P. Owen IV said the next morning that Atkison had left a four-page letter in his car that described his hatred of the liberal movement, liberals in general, as well as gays. Owen also said that Atkison blamed the liberal movement for his failure to get a job. A search warrant for his home stated that Atkison told investigators that he had targeted the church because of its liberal teachings and his belief that all liberals should be killed because they were ruining the country, according to WBIR. TVUUC is well known in Knoxville for its support of equal rights for the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community, women, and people of color. It sponsors the Spectrum Diversity Tea and Coffee House for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender teens. In 2006, TVUUC's youth group joined Spectrum members in organizing a demonstration in a Knoxville park after two same-sex teens were harassed for holding hands. UU leaders quickly reaffirmed the openness of UU congregations and their commitment to social justice. "We will not give in to fear," said a full-page advertisement the UUA published in the New York Times on August 10th. "We will meet hatred with love." Although police have not yet released the full contents of Atkison's letter, the gunman may not have picked out TVUUC simply for its liberalism. He was married for 10 years to Liza Anderson, who used to attend the church and who divorced him in 2000 after obtaining a restraining order that alleged he threatened to kill her. When they were still married, Atkison and Anderson had attended the Southeast Unitarian Universalist Summer Institute, SUUSI, at least once in the mid-1990s. Atkison's trial has been scheduled for March 2009. About 200 members of TVUUC, the Westside Unitarian Universalist Church, and people from the larger community had gathered in the TVUUC sanctuary for the performance of Annie Jr. by approximately 25 children in the church's summer musical theater workshop. John Bosted, a retired history professor and longtime member of TVUUC, was playing the role of Daddy Warbucks in the play and was waiting for his cue when Atkison opened fire. "At first, many of us thought it was some new sound effect or element that had been added to the suspense," Bostet said. Then he fired the second shot and people started screaming. Bostet and several other men rushed at Atkison after the second shot, pinning him to the ground and tying his ankles with a nylon jacket until police arrived. Bosted said that the children fled to the Second Presbyterian Church next door. "They took these kids in and locked down the building," Bosted said. "Then, as soon as the police had arrived and cleared up the scene, the Presbyterians came back over to bring ice and water and loving care and whatever they could to aid us while the police were organizing their investigation." No children were wounded in the attack. The six shooting victims who survived were Westside UU Church member Joe Barnhart, 76, and his daughter Linda Chavez, 41, Joe's brother Jack Barnhart, 69, and his wife Betty Barnhart, 71, John Worth Jr., 68, and TVUUC member Tammy Summers, 38. Allison Lee, 42, was injured while crawling to safety. Second Presbyterian hosted a candlelight vigil for the grieving UUs the evening after the assault. "Tonight is a hopeful gathering, even though it's in the midst of tragedy," said UUA President William G. Sinkford at the vigil. "There is no capacity that we need more than the ability to come together as people of faith across the boundaries of theology and liturgy and practice." "There is power in this room," the Reverend Chris Bice, TVUUC's minister, said at the vigil. "The presence of many people of so many different faith traditions and ideas being here to support our church means so much to us." About 40% of the 1,000 who attended were simply members of the community, according to Bill Dockery, a TVUUC spokesperson. Other prayer services were held in Knoxville to express support for the UU congregations, and hundreds of UU vigils were scheduled throughout the country. As a finale at the vigil, the children whose performance had been interrupted by the shooter returned to sing "Tomorrow," the well-known song from the musical Annie. They were accompanied on the piano by Vicki Masters, TVUUC's Minister of Music, who had organized Sunday's performance and who was instrumental in getting the children to safety during the incident. Sinkford traveled to Knoxville the day after the shooting, but members of the UUA Trauma Response Ministry flew to Knoxville within hours of the attack. UUA District Executive Annette Marquis also traveled to Knoxville to help. Ted Jones, TVUUC's new president, credits the ministers from the UU Trauma Response Ministry team for helping both churches process the event and begin recovery. "They helped us through the immediate crisis and set up interventions for individuals with severe trauma," he said. "They met with church leadership individually, giving them recommendations on a global scale, what to look at in the next few months, what to look at in the next year." "I want to say thank you," said Jones. "In the midst of everything, someone put up a map and put a sticker on every place we had received a message of support or letter or email from, and the map was just covered." Jane Rapparelli, the congregation's past president, said that TVUUC members have risen to the occasion, whatever their gifts. "It has brought out the absolute best in us," Rapparelli continued. "It's made me very proud to be a Unitarian Universalist, and I don't think I'm alone in saying that." Bice, TVUUC's minister, reflected on the outpouring of support TVUUC received. "We thought it was about us," Bice said. "What we discovered was that it was about the entire Knoxville community. Our children were their children. We had people show up for the memorial service July 28th, from the Tibetan Buddhist Center, from the synagogues, the local mosque, and a wide variety of Christian churches. The people who have come to feed us," he continued, "come from churches you'd consider conservative, liberal, and everything in between. But they fed us and loved us and didn't discriminate on the basis of race or sexual orientation. It's been a reflection of overwhelming, overpowering love." Rapparelli said that as president, she would sometimes hear people questioning the dues that the congregation paid to the UUA. "I would venture to say that we now know more the value of being part of the UUA and the Thomas Jefferson District." Bice agreed. The UUA, Bill Sinkford, the UU trauma team, and Annette Marquis have earned all of the dues we've paid since 1949, he said, unquestionably. 1 week after the rampage, 800 members and friends, including several former ministers of the congregation, returned to TVUUC to rededicate their sanctuary. "This sanctuary, which has been defiled by violence, we rededicate to peace," Bice said in his homily. "This holy place, which has been desecrated by an act of hatred, we reconsecrate for love." Bice concluded his remarks standing on the spot where the violence began as the congregation sang "Tomorrow." A week later, grieving members of the Westside Unitarian Universalist Church stood before their congregation and tore apart a shirt in a ceremony honoring the shooting victims from their church. Nathan Shulman and fellow worship committee member Sue Draper wore a T-shirt that bore the Westside logo and the signatures of many church members in the August 10th worship service. Shulman said that the torn shirt will be displayed in the sanctuary for about a year. Then, the shirt will be coarsely mended using thread of a contrasting color. The shirt will be usable again, but it will never be the same as it was before, he said, just as our community will never be the same as we were before. It's a graphic and violent act to tear the fabric of a shirt, said the Reverend Mitra Jafarzadeh, Westside's minister. But with the mending of the shirt, there's a corresponding promise that there will be healing. The UUA and the Thomas Jefferson District set up a Knoxville Relief Fund, which has collected $159,000. The money will be used to bring ministry, spiritual care, and practical financial assistance to the victims, their families, and others affected by the attack. The district will administer the fund. While relief has been welcome, processing it has required more of the congregation than they expected. We've had to set up a whole separate organizational structure to handle relief efforts, said Jones. We have a group of people trying to assess the physical victims' needs. He said the congregation has also contracted with a specialist in emotional trauma. One unintended effect of the publicity garnered by the shooting has been increased attendance at TVUUC. Attendance at church school is up by 15% from last year, Jones said. The same is happening with our adult attendance. It's up by about 20%. We were on the cusp of being a 500-member church, Jones said. Now we're having to plan as if we're going to be a 600-member church. Another unexpected result has been closer relations between the five Knoxville-area UU congregations. The regional community of UU churches has really extended itself in hospitality, said Lorraine Darwin, Westside's Green Sanctuary chairperson. Even though the newspapers have gone away and the media has gotten their story, the true story lays in how we're coming together and redefining ourselves as a region. With reporting by UU World contributing editor Donald E. Skinner, Jane Greer is UU World's senior editor. Extended coverage of the Knoxville church shooting is online at uuworld.org. Click Current Issue, then select Knoxville Coverage. A comprehensive guide is at uua.org/news/Knoxville. In Memoriam, Remembering the Victims, by Jane Greer. When people talk about Linda Krieger, who died from gunshot wounds in a July 27th attack during a worship service at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville, one of the first things they describe is her smile. You can't capture her smile in writing, said Susan Wolfe, a fellow member of Westside Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville. Her husband of 42 years, Dwayne Krieger, agreed. She had such a pretty smile, he said. As soon as it faded, I was racking my brains for something I could do or say to get her to do it again. Krieger loved children. Although she and her husband never had any of their own, she still viewed mothering as an important part of her life. Recently retired from a career teaching college English, Krieger had moved to Knoxville with her husband in 2007 to help friends Joe and Marianne Barnhart, also Westside members, raise their granddaughters. Joe Barnhart, who was seated near Krieger at the time of the shooting, was injured in the attack but was released from the hospital within a week. The Kriegers and Barnharts were attending a performance of the children's play Annie Jr. when the gunman began firing. Krieger has been described as a humanitarian by members of her church. This thoughtfulness continued even after her death through organ donation. She was able to help three different people live, said Dwayne Krieger. That tells you what kind of person she was. According to friends and colleagues, Greg McKendry, killed in the July 27th attack on a Knoxville UU church, was a big man with a big heart. He was a consummate church volunteer who contributed in a lot of different ways, said the Reverend Chris Bice, minister of the 500-member Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church. At the time of his death, McKendry, who had joined the church 5 years earlier, was serving as an usher and greeter. But he was also a board member, the treasurer-elect, and a former member of the Building and Grounds Committee. One of the things that McKendry especially liked was helping people climb out of financial debt. He did this by teaching a seminar on money management, which he offered at the church several times. "It actually saved my financial life," said the Reverend Rosie Rimrot, a former minister of religious education at TVUUC who took the course. "It wasn't just the class that helped me, but his passion was infectious. He loved people and he loved to help them." Friend Carolyn Franks remembered McKendry's legendary kindness. His wife had a friend who used to work for her, and her grandson needed braces. Greg said, "You need to take him to our dentist." When it came time to pay the bill, Greg said, "It's already been taken care of." McKendry is survived by his wife Barbara, 2 children, and a foster son. Jane Greer is UU World's senior editor. UUA runs Post Knoxville ad in New York Times by Donald E. Skinner. In response to the shooting that killed 2 and injured 6 during a worship service at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville, the UUA placed a full-page ad in the New York Times on August 10th that reaffirmed the UUA's commitment to the liberal positions the shooter claimed to be attacking. A man who said he hated the liberal movement opened fire during the July 27th worship service. A police search warrant said that Jim David Atkison admitted attacking the church because of its liberal teachings and his belief that all liberals should be killed because they were ruining the country. "We will not give in to fear," the UUA advertisement read. "We will meet hatred with love. We will continue to work for justice. Our hearts and the doors of our more than 1,000 Unitarian Universalist congregations nationwide remain open. Unitarian Universalists stand on the side of love. We invite you to stand with us." The Reverend Dr. Tracy Robinson Harris, the UUA's Director of Congregational Services, said the ad grew out of a desire to let the wider community know about UU values in the wake of the attack. Robinson Harris said that the purpose of the ad was to express condolences to the families and friends of those killed and injured, celebrate the bravery of those who subdued the assailant, thank those of all faiths who reached out with support, and to publicly affirm the commitment of the UUA and its congregations to social justice. "We started thinking about whether there was a message we wanted to share beyond our own UU community," Robinson Harris said, "to reaffirm the values we hold, and to say that in spite of the tragedy and loss and grief, we were not going to retreat from offering open doors and open hearts." She added, "We decided that we had something that was worth saying, and that the New York Times would be a place to speak publicly in a broad way and do it quickly. We wanted people to know that we, as UUs, have been touched by the tragedies, but the essential nature of who we are remains unchanged." An expanded version of this story was published on UUWorld.org on August 25, 2008. Donald E. Skinner is a contributing editor for UU World. Hurricanes destroy homes and buildings in Texas. Unitarian Universalists on the Gulf Coast were hit hard by twin hurricanes in September. The most recent damage came September 13th, when Hurricane Ike pummeled Galveston and Houston, Texas, with wind and rain, damaging many homes as well as several congregational buildings. The earlier hurricane, Gustav, came ashore September 1st, damaging the Unitarian Church of Baton Rouge. The Reverend Susan Smith, district executive for the UUA Southwestern Conference, said many members of the Galveston and Houston area congregations had severe damage to their homes, and several families were homeless. Amazingly, the building of the UU Fellowship of Galveston County, just blocks from the Gulf of Mexico, was undamaged, despite a huge amount of damage all across the island. The home of Susan Persons, president of the Galveston congregation, was flooded. Persons said all members of the congregation were believed to be safe. A wall of a building under construction for the Henry David Thoreau UU congregation in Stafford, a Houston suburb, blew down in the storm. The congregation's current building had minor water damage. The First UU Church and Emerson UU Church both had damage from roof leaks. The Unitarian Fellowship of Houston had water damage to two religious education rooms. The Northwoods UU Church in the Woodlands, another Houston suburb, had debris to clean up and a flooded parking lot, but no apparent damage to its building. The Bay Area UU Church, which plans to dedicate a new wing in a few weeks, escaped damage, said the Reverend Dr. Matt Tittle. The Unitarian Fellowship of Longview, Texas, east of Dallas, was damaged when two pine trees fell on the entrance. The Unitarian Church of Baton Rouge, the mother church of the UU relief effort after Hurricane Katrina in 2005, suffered serious roof damage and interior water damage from Hurricane Gustav on September 1st, and Hurricane Ike exacerbated that damage. The church also lost six large trees. Repair costs are estimated at between $25,000 and $50,000, said Diana Doro, the church's program director. An expanded version of this story was published on UUWorld.org on September 22, 2008. Donald E. Skinner is a contributing editor for UU World. UUA Head Joins Group Talking to Iranian Leader by Donald E. Skinner. UUA President William G. Singford was one of 12 peace activists who spoke with Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and other Iranian officials at a meeting on Wednesday, September 24th, in New York City. The meeting was organized by the Fellowship of Reconciliation. More than 100 peace activists also attended. Singford spoke about the importance of religious and political freedoms to UUs. Central to our religious heritage as Unitarian Universalists is the defense of religious and political freedoms and full equality for all people, regardless of gender, sexual orientation, race, or national origin, he said. According to Adam Gerhardstein, acting director of the UUA Washington Office for Advocacy, Ahmadinejad responded by talking at length about Iranian attitudes towards women. He cited statistics about the civil engagement of Iranian women, speaking also about the Iranian belief that women are the essence of society's beauty and kindness. Singford was joined by a delegation of UUs, including Gerhardstein and Bruce Knotts, executive director of the UU United Nations office. An expanded version of this story was published on UUWorld.org on September 29, 2008. Donald E. Skinner is a contributing editor for UU World. Meadville Lombard Emphasizes Community Service by Michelle Bates Deacon. When first-year students at Meadville Lombard Theological School arrived in Chicago for their classes in early September, they sat down to the beginnings of a new curriculum at the Unitarian Universalist Seminary. Meadville Lombard rolled out its new Community Partnership Program in September and, subject to approval of the Meadville Board in November, plans to introduce sweeping changes to the curriculum next year. "We are reconceptualizing the way that ministers are educated," said the Reverend Dr. Lee Barker, Meadville Lombard's president. "This new century requires another way of thinking about ministerial formation that more closely approximates the ministerial service that our students will be engaged in." Faculty members have been working with Barker to craft the details of the plan, which include integrating practice with theory throughout a student's tenure at Meadville Lombard, incorporating a 3-year mentoring relationship with a minister and a congregation, and preparing students for ministry in 3 years rather than the traditional 4. Meadville's new approach puts students into community placements during their first weeks of school. "Instead of waiting until the second or third year, we are exposing students immediately to a field site experience," said the Reverend Dr. Kiyama Rahman, Meadville's newly appointed director of contextual ministry, who is overseeing the placement of students in Chicago's Woodlawn neighborhood and co-teaching a seminar accompanying the field site experience for first-year students. "I think it's going to make a tremendous difference," Rahman said, "for students coming in to think sooner rather than later about what does it mean to be in relationship with others who are different than you? What does it look like to stand with them and partner with them and work with them as a minister in formation?" The curricular changes at Meadville Lombard and changes at the other UU seminary, Star King's School for the Ministry in Berkeley, California, see page 46, follow a turbulent few years. Earlier in the decade, the schools discussed merging in response to concerns that each was too small to have the necessary critical mass of enrollment, faculty, and staff to achieve long-term financial sustainability. The talks came to a halt in July 2006 with a decision that the schools would remain independent. The following spring, both schools learned that their major benefactor, the UUA, was re-examining its process of granting money to both schools. In April 2007, the UUA board passed a motion directing the UUA Panel of Theological Education, POTE, to present recommendations to the Board of Trustees that would make the funding of ministerial formation, development, and excellence the first priority for use of the panel's resources, rather than the current singular focus on support for theological schools. The Reverend Barbara Merritt, POTE chair, said the board was also taking into account that only 35% of students preparing for UU ministry were enrolled in the two UU seminaries. Others study at Andover Newton Theological School, Harvard Divinity School, and other divinity schools. Nearly 70% of the POTE money was going to 35% of the ministerial students, she said. The panel is continuing to fund the UU seminaries. However, the levels have been cut. In 2007, the UUA awarded the schools $250,000 each. In 2008, the grants fell to $225,000 each. And in 2009, they will receive $200,000. "We are firmly committed to the schools," Merritt said. But the panel is also committed to distributing the funds equitably, and it is rededicating itself to funding excellence in ministry. In December, POTE is hosting a conference in Seattle to examine ministerial excellence and the best ways for POTE to use its grants to fund it. An expanded version of this article was published on UUWorld.org on September 22, 2008. Michelle Bates Deacon, a UU World contributing editor, is the author of Gay Marriage, Real Life, 10 Stories of Love and Family, Skinner House Books, 2005. She is a member of the First Parish Unitarian Universalist of Arlington, Massachusetts. Star King Curriculum Emphasizes Interfaith Studies by Michelle Bates Deacon. When Perry Pike moved cross-country to attend Star King School for the Ministry, he didn't think there would be room for all of him. A student of Sufism and a universalist raised in the Bible Belt, Pike was used to covering up his religious beliefs as much as he covered up that he was gay. But on his first day on campus, he heard there was a Sufi professor and he met out transgender people for the first time. "I knew right away that I wouldn't have to hide here. I could be out religiously and in terms of gender orientation," said Pike, now in his third year of the Master of Divinity program. Pike's experience mirrors the widening scope of the curriculum at Star King. The Berkeley, California UU Seminary has long embraced progressive educational values, but its emerging curricular model is more explicit in its mission to provide theological education that is student-centered, counter-oppressive, and multi-religious. It is also increasing its online offerings and incorporating more immersion learning, trips abroad, as well as internships in congregations, prisons, and hospitals. Star King is a member of the Graduate Theological Union, GTU, a consortium of 9 theological schools and 8 affiliated centers. After the September 11th attacks, GTU academics turned to Star King to help create a Center for Islamic Studies. "We had the longest track record of studying global religion in our curriculum, said Reverend Dr. Rebecca Parker, president and professor of theology at Star King. And we had the only full-time faculty member with expertise in Islamic studies, Dr. Ibrahim Farajajeh. Star King agreed to take the lead in developing the GTU's Center for Islamic Studies. At the same time, it began to grapple more deeply with what faculty saw as a calling to develop multi-religious education at Star King. Farajajeh conceptualized an approach to interfaith study that is a new way to teach about the study of global religious traditions, Parker said. This approach to religious study goes beyond the traditional comparative religious model and studies world religions in their intersections and in relationship to one another. Things we've thought of as monolithic traditions are more like living organisms, said Parker. It is important for Unitarian Universalist ministers and religious leaders to be trained in this way of thinking, said Farajajeh. It doesn't mean a new generation of ministers will know everything there is to know about religion, but their way of looking at religion will be different. Farajajeh's work attracted the attention of the Luce Foundation, which in 2005 awarded Star King a 3-year grant of $300,000 to develop and implement the curriculum for a Master of Divinity degree in multi-religious understanding. Earlier this year, the Luce Foundation awarded the school a second grant. That donation followed an anonymous gift of $500,000 in 2007 to support the new educational model. Additional donations followed, raising a total of $1 million for the new curriculum. The donations could not have come at a better time. Traditionally, the UUA has been the largest benefactor of the two UU schools, Star King and Meadville Lombard Theological School. Like Meadville Lombard, Star King is watching UUA grants shrink. See story on page 44. The reductions follow a motion passed by the UUA board directing the UUA Panel on Theological Education, POTE, to make recommendations about the distribution of funds to emphasize ministerial formation, development, and excellence, rather than largely focusing on funding the UU seminaries. A conference in December will focus on POTE's charge. Parker will attend. My hope is that the UUA can see the significance of Unitarian Universalist theological schools in UU education, she said, and be proud of it and invest in it. An expanded version of this article was published on UUWorld.org on September 29, 2008. Michelle Bates Deacon, a UU World contributing editor, is the author of Gay Marriage, Real Life, 10 Stories of Love and Family, Skinner House Books, 2005. She is a member of the First Parish Unitarian Universalist of Arlington, Massachusetts. UU Churches Pitch Tents of Hope, by Rosalie Davis. Unitarian Universalist congregations are pitching tents to raise consciousness about the flight of Darfurian refugees through the Tents of Hope project. Begun by the United Church of Christ in 2007, Tents of Hope is being promoted among UUs by the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, UUSC, and the UUA's Washington Office for Advocacy. The program will culminate in a demonstration in Washington, D.C., calling for greater assistance for Darfurian refugees November 7th through 9th. UUSC decided to partner with Tents of Hope because it is a program for people of all ages, said Kara Smith, UUSC campaign assistant for outreach and mobilization. Tents of Hope was a perfect match for the UUSC's existing Drumbeats for Darfur advocacy effort, she said. At last count, participants in more than 300 American cities, including at least 4 Unitarian Universalist congregations, have purchased tents, which they have then decorated with flowers, peace signs, and messages like Save Darfur and Peace. The tents are pitched in places where they will attract attention. UUSC supplies information and other advocacy materials to distribute at the tents. Since 2003, the humanitarian crisis in Darfur, the western region of Sudan, has claimed some 300,000 lives and displaced another 2.5 million people, according to a recent United Nations estimate. Around the world, anywhere people have been displaced, you find tents, said Claire DeRoche, social justice coordinator at the UU congregation at Shelter Rock in Manhasset, New York, which adopted the program. The tent is both a biblical and a current symbol, and a powerful one, she said. Adults and youth from the UU Church of Kent, Ohio, made a tent and took it to a local heritage festival in early summer as a stage for outreach. It was a wonderful, multi-generational collaborative, said Diana Van Winkle, Director of Religious Education. About 30 people signed up to staff the tent, and people of all ages participated. We knew it would be an opportunity to learn, but we found real feelings of hope and pride in the possibility of doing something active, added the Reverend Melissa Carville Zimmer, Kent's minister. One very outgoing person was actually calling people into the tent, she said, while another member brought her drum. Said Carville Zimmer, she kept the drumbeat going. An expanded version of this story was published on UUWorld.org on September 8, 2008. Rosalie Davis, a member of the First Church Unitarian Universalist in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts, was a summer intern at UU World in 2008. Changes Proposed to UUA Principles by Warren R. Ross. The Commission on Appraisal released a draft revision of the UUA's principles and purposes in September. The principles and purposes are contained in Article 2 of the Association's bylaws and are subject to periodic review. The draft Article 2 is headed Covenant rather than the current Principles and Purposes and consists of six sections: Purposes, Identity, Sources, Principles, Inclusion, and Freedom of Belief. The UUA's seven principles, adopted at the time of the merger in 1961, were modified by General Assemblies in 1984, 1985, and 1995. The question facing the Commission was, basically, whether to retain them or start from scratch. Choosing what could be considered a middle ground, the Commission's draft retains the principles almost verbatim, slightly abbreviating numbers 3 and 5, but substantially changes the context within which they appear. For example, in place of the current lead-in phrase that we affirm and promote the principles, the draft now says that we honor and uphold them. The Commission set a deadline of October 16th for comments. After deciding whether further revisions are needed, the Commission will submit its final draft to the UUA Board of Trustees in December 2008. Assuming the Board approves it, with or without changes, the proposal will then be placed on the agenda of the 2009 General Assembly. If a majority votes yes, the revised Article 2 will then be resubmitted to the 2010 GA for final approval. This process is in part required by the bylaws and in part reflects the Commission's desire for what the Reverend Barbara Child, project leader, has called a denomination-wide process of reflection on the essence of what Unitarian Universalism stands for. An expanded version of this story was published on UUWorld.org on September 15, 2008. Warren R. Ross is a UU World contributing editor and the author of The Premise and the Promise, The Story of the Unitarian Universalist Association, Skinner House Books, 2001. Text of Proposed Bylaw Changes by the UUA Commission on Appraisal. Article 2, Covenant. Section C, 2.1, Purposes. As a voluntary association of free yet interdependent congregations, the Unitarian Universalist Association will support the health and growth of existing congregations and the formation of new congregations. The association will devote its resources to and exercise its corporate powers for religious, educational, and humanitarian purposes. It will empower the creation of just and diverse congregations that enact Unitarian Universalist principles in the world. Section C, 2.2, Identity. The Unitarian Universalist Association is composed of congregations rooted in the heritage of two religious faiths, the Unitarian heritage, ever questioning and ever seeking the unity in all things, and the Universalist heritage, ever affirming the power of hope and God's infinite love. Both traditions have been shaped by heretics, choice makers who in every age have summoned individuals and communities to maintain their beliefs in spite of persecution and to struggle for religious freedom. Section C, 2.3, Sources. The living tradition we share draws from many sources. Unitarianism and Universalism are grounded on more than 2,000 years of Jewish and Christian teachings, traditions, and experiences. Unitarian Universalism is not contained in any single book or creed. It draws from the teachings of the Abrahamic religions, earth-centered spirituality, and other world religious traditions. It engages perspectives from humanism, mysticism, theism, skepticism, naturalism, and feminist and liberation theologies. It is informed by the arts and the sciences. It trusts the value of direct experiences of mystery and wonder, and it recognizes the sacred may be found within the ordinary. Wisdom and beauty may be expressed in many forms, in poetry and prose, in story and song, in metaphor and myth, in drama and dance, in fabric and painting, in scripture and music, in drawing and sculpture, in public ritual and solitary practice, in prophetic speech and courageous deed. Grateful for the traditions that have strengthened our own, we strive to avoid misappropriation of cultural and religious practices and to seek ways of appreciation that are respectful and welcomed. Section C, 2.4, Principles. In order that we might work together in harmony to make our communities and our world more likely to protect and nurture all that is positive and hopeful, and in order that members of our congregations might find spiritual challenge to become their best selves as they worship and work together to create the beloved community, we, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to honor and uphold the inherent worth and dignity of every person. At the core of Unitarian Universalism is recognition of the sanctity of every human being across the lifespan. We are relational creatures, capable of both good and evil. We have experienced enough brokenness, including in ourselves, to seek the power of forgiveness and reconciliation. We are called to make choices that help to heal and transform ourselves and the world, and to move toward solidarity with all beings. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Grateful for the gift of life and mindful of our own mortality, we seek to respond with generosity and loving action. We are called to live in right relationship with others. Acceptance of one another and encouragement of spiritual growth. We seek to enter dialogue with one another in mutual love and respect, honoring our varied backgrounds and paths. We are called to stretch and deepen our faith through religious education, creative engagement, and spiritual practice in our congregations and in our lives. A free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Unitarian Universalism is an evolutionary religion that encourages and supports lifelong spiritual exploration. Unitarian Universalist religious authority lies in the individual, nurtured and tested in congregation and wider community. In a spirit of humility and openness, we are called to seek truth and meaning wherever found through experience, reason, intuition, and emotion. The right of conscience and the use of democratic processes. We seek to ensure that all voices are heard, especially those often left out on the margins. We are called to promote fairness, accountability, honesty and transparency. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. We seek to create, sustain, and celebrate multi-generational and multicultural communities where oppression cannot thrive and where hope and peace flourish. We are called to counter legacies of injustice and to foster reconciliation. Respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Inspired by the beauty and holiness of the earth, we become more willing to relinquish material desires. We recognize the need for sacrifice as we build a world that is both just and sustainable. We are called to be good stewards, restoring the earth and protecting all beings. As free yet interdependent congregations, we enter into this covenant, promising to one another our mutual trust, kindness, and support. Should we break this covenant, we will seek to repair the relationship and recommit to the promises we have made. Section C, 2.5, Inclusion. We strive to be an association of congregations that welcome persons of every identity while calling them to act in right relationship. We encourage the fullest participation allowed by law, with no person excluded solely on the basis of age or identity. Structures of power have traditionally created barriers for persons and groups with certain identities, abilities, and histories. Dissatisfied with mere non-discrimination, we commit to structuring congregational and associational life in ways that empower and enhance the efforts and experiences of every participant. Section C, 2.6, Freedom of Belief. Freedom of belief is central to the Unitarian Universalist heritage. Nothing in these bylaws shall be deemed to infringe upon individual freedom of belief. Although no statement of belief can be required as a creedal test for individual membership in a congregation or congregational affiliation with the association, congregations are free to establish their own statements of purpose, covenants, and bonds of union. For more information on the proposed bylaw changes, visit uua.org/COA. Visit uuworld.org for links to the current principles and purposes and articles about their place in Unitarian Universalism. UU World is the magazine of the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. This recording is made possible by the UUA Department of Communications and the UUA Accessibilities Office. I'm Dick Hill.